As we approach the summer months, vacation becomes the topic of conversation for many people. But this year, it seems like people are taking a different approach to travel as inflation and depreciating currency erodes the vacationer's budget. I'm Christy I, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we're going to be talking about the cost of vacation and why it seems like prices are going out of control. Although the sheer number of tourists is near pre-pandemic levels in 2023, multiple reports show economic concerns curbing ambitions as travelers are spending less. And to complicate matters further, travel prices are especially high from a combination of surging travel demand, industry staff shortages, and general inflation leading to hotel room rates and airfares to record highs. And perhaps the biggest increase in expense is the cost of rental vehicle. High rental car prices became one of the biggest stories of the pandemic era travel as people opted for more road trips over air travel. However, due to supply chain breakdowns and the concurrent semiconductor shortage, the average car rental price in 2023 was 37% higher than 2020. And while luxury resorts had hoped that high-earning tourists have pent up travel demand from not taking a vacation in 2020, they were sorely disappointed. According to research from Bloomberg, your average medium to high-end traveler have a new ceiling for how much they're willing to spend on a hotel every night. And that's only $500. 69% of those surveyed were capped at a budget of $3,500 for 7 nights, while 24% were willing to spend up to $1,000 a night. And a good reason for having this conservative budget, especially when it comes to resorts and airlines, is that prices are continuing to be inflated without any reflection in better services. Research firms found that in 2022, luxury room rates were 38% higher than in 2019, for no reason, as the room rates were not backed up by an increase in demand outweighing supply, or did they have better services. American travelers on average take 3.5 leisure trips in 12 months. And on average, vacationer spending is about 2% of the total budget of the U.S. household annually. Vacation expenditures vary by age group, with near retirees spending nearly 4 times as much on trips on average compared to young people under the age of 25. And back in 2013, the average cost of a vacation came out to around $3,250 for a typical 12-night trip. But this amount has risen considerably in the past decade. Today, prices for everything from restaurants to hotel rooms and international airfare have risen sharply. A round-trip airline ticket to Europe is now $1,000, which is 20% more than in 2019 and 32% more costly than last year. A round-trip flight to Asia costs $1,600, about 60% higher than in 2019. And overall, travel costs are up 9% in the past year and 20% versus 2019. And these are record-high prices and a notable shift considering that prices had generally been falling for international travel before the pandemic. With record-high prices in the tourism industry, people might even feel uncomfortable to share their travel plans or where they can actually afford to go. With this in mind, let's bring in Dr. Haley Stanton, CEO of Tourism Teacher. Thank you so much for joining us, Haley.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course. Now, starting off, Haley, how do the cost of vacation and tourism vary between different cultures? Do some countries spend more on their vacations than others?
Yes, absolutely. There are certain cultures that do like to spend more on travel. Predominantly, we have the people from the US like to spend a lot on their travel, Europeans, and those from wealthy countries. But the newest sort of country in the market that is spending a lot on travel and tourism is China. And China are growing rapidly in terms of their outbound tourism market. So the people that leave China to go to other countries. And they also spend more, apart from the US, they spend more than any other nationality.
Wow, and how have changes in global economic conditions impacted the tourism industry in recent years?
So obviously we've had the COVID pandemic, which has had a major impact on the travel and tourism industry. Travel and tourism was completely halted in many countries. And people, whilst you might think that people have less money because a lot of people weren't going to work, what actually has happened is that a lot of people couldn't travel for quite some time. So they saved up the money that they would usually have spent on traveling. So now that borders are open and people can travel freely again, what we are seeing is a lot of people are spending more money on travel and booking those sort of holidays of a lifetime because they had that sort of time where they couldn't go anywhere and they've planned it and they've really anticipated this trip. So whilst globally, the economy has been struggling and we've had, you know, the Russia-Ukraine war, we've had COVID. What we've largely seen is a lot of people have been saving up to go on those sort of big trips.
And now, what are some of the main industries that are directly affected by tourism and how does tourism impact their profitability and growth?
Well, tourism is interlinked with lots of different industries. So, for example, agriculture industries, you know, people need to eat. So if a tourism industry is developed in a certain country, they will need more food to feed the people that go there as tourists. It's interlinked with, you know, retail, for example. So when we go on holiday, we often like to go shopping. We like to buy souvenirs. So there's a big sort of ripple effect when people go on holiday. And this can have a huge benefit to the economy of the place that is hosting the tourism. Now, one of the things that we do see a lot, which is a negative economic impact, is that destinations have a sort of leakage problem. It's known as economic leakage, where lots of the money that they make from tourism actually leaks out into other countries. So, for example, if you were going on holiday, I don't know, to let's say Thailand, for example, but you were staying in a Hilton hotel, a lot of that money would go back to the Hilton headquarters, which obviously are not based in Thailand. So this is a form of economic leakage. Another example is all-inclusive holidays. So particularly us Brits, we like to book an all-inclusive holiday where you get everything included, your accommodation, your transfers, your food, your drinks, everything. And what we see is that tourists go to these hotels and that it's like an enclave environment. So you're kind of in your own bubble and you don't leave that bubble. And what that means is that holiday company, which often is a foreign-owned company, will retain most of your money. And therefore, if it's foreign-owned, most of that money will be going back to wherever the organization is based. So whilst there is potential for lots and lots of money to be made in other industries that are related to tourism, unfortunately, that is not always in the destination that hosts the tourism, and they often will miss out there.
Absolutely, but in your example, wouldn't these hotels be hiring a lot of locals and wouldn't they be contributing to a lot of the employment of the locals in the tourism industry?
Yes, typically they will employ locals. One of the negative impacts that we often see is that the higher level jobs, lots of foreign owned companies might import stuff. And when we're looking at sustainability principles, which is really core in tourism and in, you know, many other walks of life, and it's only going to get bigger and bigger. One of the core sustainability principles is to keep things local, to hire local people. So we will typically see a lot of the lower level or lower paid jobs by local people, the cleaners, the sort of waiters, the bar staff, that kind of thing. But what we sometimes do see is that the more managerial posts are imported staff. What we really need is for the organizations to actually train up the local people so that they can be promoted and grow into those roles rather than importing foreign staff. But obviously, when there are people in the local area who are employed in the tourism industry, they then have more money to spend in the economy. So for example, if somebody is employed as, say, a cleaner who wouldn't have otherwise had a job, maybe they're a cleaner in a hotel, they've now got more money to send their children to school or to go shopping and to buy luxury goods that maybe they wouldn't have bought before, to spend more money on that meal. So that money then has a sort of ripple effect. And, you know, that when they spend more money on the food, the restaurant or the shop that sells the food will have more money. The school that they're now sending their kids to that they couldn't afford before now has more money. That school can then spend more money on supplies, on improving their infrastructure. More people are paying taxes. So because they're paying taxes now, that money goes to the government. The government can reinvest that as they see fit. So potentially they can improve their healthcare or their education system or, you know, their infrastructure or whatever that may be. So tourism has so much power and is such a big multiplier effect. But what's really key is that we make sure that it's sustainably managed, and preferably as much as possible is staying locally within the local economy.
Absolutely. And can you discuss the economic importance of tourism to both the local and the national economies?
Well, tourism is hugely important economically to many, many countries around the world because it is oftentimes the main revenue generator and the main way that the destination makes money. The problem we have with this is when countries or destinations begin to over-rely on tourism. And there's many reasons that tourism could be taken away. So, for example, the recent COVID pandemic, but also, if there are destinations in, for example, France and Spain that have had budget airlines start up new routes. So all of a sudden, they've got all these people who can fly there really cheaply. So they want to go on holidays there. So they start building new hotels, they start building new restaurants, new businesses all pop up. And then the airline decides, actually, this isn't our most profitable route, and they take it away. And that industry then is just decimated. So you really are at the mercy oftentimes of other stakeholders like the airlines, which can take tourism away just like that. Also, there are things like natural disasters or terrorism or economic instability, and all of these things can take away tourism. So whilst tourism is a major economic driver in many countries around the world, what's really important is that the destinations diversify their income. And yes, tourism can be a big part, but it shouldn't be their only way or their predominant way of making money. Because when things like COVID-19 happen, or many the other examples that I gave, that can be absolutely devastating for the local economy. And we saw that over, during 2020, 2021.
Yes, it's a very risky business. And are there any notable examples of countries that have successfully leveraged tourism to boost their economy?
There are many countries that use tourism to boost their economy. Probably the best examples would be the countries that do rely mostly on tourism. So places like the Maldives, places like the Caribbean islands, Fiji, a lot of these areas that don't have much other industry or don't have many other ways of making money have seen huge success as a result of tourism. And this is great, but as I say, we need to make sure we manage that sustainably. Another thing that we see often happen is that destinations will jump in head first and they'll see dollar signs and they think this is wonderful. We're making all this money. People are coming here. But unless they have the correct sustainability principles in place, what will happen or what might happen is that we experience some of the negative impacts of tourism. So perhaps the local people feeling unhappy about the amount of tourists, perhaps the environment being damaged, perhaps it's driving up the cost of living, because that's really interesting. And I actually just read an article on The Conversation. I just saw it shared this evening. And it was talking about how the rise of digital nomads has had an impact on living costs in developing countries. So lots of people are deciding it's really expensive where I live in London, in New York, in Chicago, wherever you might be from. They're moving to destinations that are cheaper, Thailand, India, Bali, wherever. There's lots of sort of really popular digital nomad destinations. But what's happening is that the businesses in that area recognize, okay, these people have got money, I can charge more money, and it drives up costs. And what that does is it then affects the local people, and they can no longer afford things in their area. They can no longer afford land. We see gentrification occur. So this is not a good thing either. So economically, tourism is such a powerful force, but we really need to have a long-term vision. And the destinations that just sort of have that short-term mindset are really putting themselves at risk in the long term.
Absolutely. It's a very delicate balance to keep straight. Thank you so much, Dr. Haley, but please stick around. Dr. Haley Stanton will stay with us and be with us right here after the break. And when we come back, tourism has become a global job creator, especially for women in developing countries. We'll have more after the break.
The country. kind of liberal agenda we see in the West now is not really reason-based, but it's a kind of quasi-religious creed. And they are trying to crowd out all sorts of realistic, practical objections to their vision of creating a kind of city on the hill on earth.
Take a fresh look around at life. Kaleidoscopic, isn't it? A shattered reality distorted by power. Tired vision with no real opinions. Pictures designed to simplify or confuse. Who really wants a better world? And is it just for the chosen few? Fractured images presented as fact. Can you see through their illusions? Going underground can.
Тебе удружил, тайгану подсунул.
Вот такие пирожки, парни, вот мы попали, а.
Я казак, поза мной мой тайган. До этого полгода воевал в этом же батальоне, только он назывался Таврида. В штурмовом батальоне.
Уходим, уходим, уходим. От окна, от окна, от окна.
У меня сыновьям по 16 лет.
Дети тоже воспитаны в таком духе.
Да нужно быть солдатом. Казак ты, не казак. Нужно быть солдатом. С детства.
Global tourism has become the largest industry in the world, with nearly 500 million consumers of tourism services per year, spending hundreds of billions of dollars. The industry provides employment to over 100 million people worldwide and provides many opportunities for developing countries to create productive and inclusive jobs, grow innovative firms, and finance the conservation of natural and cultural assets, especially for women, who comprise the majority of the tourism sector's workforce. Tourism accounted for 6.1% of global GDP in 2021. And this includes things from medical tourism, which has benefited developing nations like the US and the UK, all the way through leisure family vacations. These tourism dollars that vacationers spend on restaurants, travel, and hotels help the local economy to generate revenue for growth. Small and developing and third world countries are even more in need of this cash flow because, in some cases, the tourism industry is the main driver of their local economies that provide employment for the towns. Worldwide, 44 countries rely on travel and tourism industry for more than 15% of their total share of employment. These tourist-centric countries are the hardest hit from global travel restrictions and inflation. But in absolute dollar amount, the U.S. tourism industry contributed over $1.8 billion to its economy, followed by China at $1.6 billion. Tourism has continued to recover in 2023, and overall, international arrivals have reached 80% of pre-pandemic levels in the first quarter of 2023. An estimated 235 million tourists traveled internationally, and the industry has continued to show its resilience. The Middle East saw the strongest performance as the only region exceeding 2019 arrivals and the first to recover pre-pandemic numbers in a full quarter. Europe reached 90% of pre-pandemic levels, driven by strong intra-regional demand. Africa reached 88%, while Americas reached 85% of 2029 levels. Asia and the Pacific still had strict COVID restrictions and thus only had a 54% recovery. But this is set to accelerate now that most of China has reopened. International tourism receipts grew to hit the $1 trillion mark in 2022, driven by the rebound in travel. International visitor spending reached 64% of pre-pandemic levels, and Europe had nearly $550 billion in tourism receipts, or 87% of pre-pandemic levels, followed by Africa, the Middle East, and the Americas at 68%. Meanwhile, Asian destinations only earned about 28% of their tourism receipts due to the prolonged border shutdown. Tourism still faces some challenges, though, including the high global inflation rates and rising oil prices, which translates to higher transport and accommodation costs. As a result, tourists are expected to increasingly seek value for money and travel closer to home. And this is problematic for countries that rely heavily on tourism as part of their GDP. Countries like the Maldives and the British Virgin Islands reveal that 39 and 33% respectively of their GDP comes from tourism and contribute to the employment of their local economy. In the Maldives, tourism directly brings in over $1 billion a year. And this will become a big problem if tourists increasingly decide to stay closer to home. And while tourism is necessary for many countries, there are also some drawbacks to tourism, as a significant increase in tourism traffic can hurt the environment. Tourists generate a significant amount of garbage and waste and have been criticized for destroying the natural essence of a region. Countries have also criticized the tourism industry for commercializing their culture with little regard to their actual identity. And for more on tourism drawbacks and the negative consequences of this lucrative business, let's bring in once again Dr. Haley Stanton, CEO of Tourism Teacher. Now, Haley, thanks for joining us again. What are some of the potential challenges or risks associated with the over-reliance on tourism as a primary source of income for a country?
Well, there are a lot of risks when we do rely on it as the primary income, because we're putting all of our eggs in one basket, essentially. And there are lots of things that could happen to prevent tourism from happening. COVID-19 was a fantastic example of that. Obviously, negative example, but put it into perspective very clearly that without tourism, you know, destinations can really, really struggle. For example, in Thailand, there were people who had elephant sanctuaries, one of the biggest things to do when you visit Thailand, and they were unable to feed the elephants, and the elephants were dying and really struggling. And that's really, really sad to see. There were people in Bali who were literally having to take their children out of schools because they no longer had any money to pay for those schools. So there was many situations around the world where not having that tourism has had such a vast negative effect. So it's really important that destinations diversify and, yes, have tourism, encourage tourism, make sure it's sustainable, and don't have that as your sole income source, because if it is taken away, whether it's due to a pandemic, a natural disaster, a terrorism attack, or simply because maybe the destination just isn't so fashionable anymore, that can really harm the destination and the economy of that area.
Yes, and then how does the strength of a country's currency impact its tourism industry and the cost of travel for international visitors?
Well, currencies can have a really big impact. Generally, a lot of people like to travel to a place because they feel they can get good value for money. And when the currency is stronger in a destination, it means your value for money is going down. So, for example, London has always had a really strong currency with the British pound. And whilst, yes, we have lots of tourists that come to visit London, there are also a lot of people who actually say, I'm going to go somewhere else because it's so expensive. The cost of accommodation is very, very expensive in London. The cost of living, the cost of going out to a restaurant, etc. So when the currency is very strong in an area, that might actually deter people from visiting. On the contrary to that, lots of countries will like to attract tourists who come from a country where they do have a strong currency. So, for example, if you visit somewhere like Goa in India or Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt, and when you land into the airport, perhaps somebody helps you with your bags, they will say, please, can I have a British pound? I don't want local currency, because they know that the British pound is very valuable. It's worth a lot. It holds its value as well. It's not an unstable currency like many of the currencies are around the world. So it can, if you're a tourist that comes from a country with a strong currency, that can be very desirable to other countries.
Yes. And then what countries are the most heavily dependent on tourism as a major contributor to their GDP and employment?
There are lots of countries actually that are very, very heavily reliant on tourism. Indonesia, particularly Bali, tourism is one of their major drivers. Thailand has tourism as a major driver. Places like the Maldives, the Caribbean, the Bahamas, etc. They all rely very, very heavily on tourism. And without that tourism, they struggle. And we've seen that with the recent pandemic, particularly in the Asian countries. For example, Indonesia, as I say, with Bali, Thailand, Singapore, Malaysia, those destinations rely very, very heavily, particularly on Chinese tourists. So it was, and that was made very evident when the rest of the world started recovering and their tourism industry started to grow again, but that part of the world didn't, despite those countries having freedom of movement, because China did not. There were many people that would usually visit those countries that were unable to.
Absolutely. And while tourism is a great boost to these local economies, not every single country seems to think so. And some local communities and small businesses claim that they actually suffer from tourism in popular destinations. How so?
Overtourism is a real problem. Overtourism is when we have too many people in a destination. And what you will often find is that you'll have maybe a quaint village or a small seaside town, and all of a sudden, perhaps only for a few weeks of the year, there will be a huge influx of tourists. And the local people generally don't like this. It means when they try, you know, when they try to go shopping, they've got long queues. It means their streets are full of traffic. They can't find a place to park outside their own home. It means that the natural vegetation might be trampled because there's so many people walking all over it. Things like this really can aggravate the local population. And if you're going to make tourism sustainable, what we need to do is to make sure that all of the stakeholders, all of the people who have some involvement directly or indirectly with the tourism industry, including the people who live in the area that host the tourism, are on board with it and are supportive of it. And when you have the local people who feel aggrieved by the tourism that's taking place, that's when you start to experience problems.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dr. Haley, for all your time today.
My pleasure.
While the tourism industry is the big winner here, they aren't winning as big as one might think. The industry has faced 3 years of unprecedented hardship from the pandemic and is still feeling the effects as staffing continues to remain a challenge. Hotel employment is down from 2019 as many still desire the luxury of work-from-home jobs. And while 2022 saw one of the strongest summer travel seasons ever, when inflation is taken into account, the industry likely won't see full recovery for several more years. Macroeconomic and geopolitical hurdles are slowing the full recovery of tourism. And as for the vacationer, while they still might have a wonderful experience, it will definitely cost a lot more than it did in 2019, even though the average wage has not kept up with inflation. But there are those that are willing to forego their vacation in order to save and budget for other necessities. The number one barrier to travel in 2023 is actually lack of money, according to the annual State of Travel report, followed by lack of time off from work or school, family and other commitments, and finally, concerns about COVID, which is now barely even an afterthought. I'm Christy Yai. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you right back here next time on The Cost of Everything.